I started off doing some very highbrow stuff for the BBC, poetry and prose reading, you know, dramatic stuff. Then I kind of blurred my way into comedy. My dad saw an ad in the local paper about a studio near us that recorded commercials. It never occurred to me that anyone actually had a job doing voiceover. It seemed like a really silly thing to do for a living. It didn't seem like a proper job, but he said I should go and send them a tape, so I did. And they invited me in for a voice test. It was terrible. Shocking, because when you read radio ads, you have to speak in such an upsy-downsy way. Nobody normal speaks like that, and I just couldn't get over my embarrassment at first. So I went away and listened to commercial radio and transcribed the ads and practiced them to find my own style, my own voice. I learned the different conventions of a voiceover artist, a certain way you do lists, a certain way you do price-product commercials and so on. You know, say it's about a garden centre and they've got a Christmas special on. You'd say candles and potted plants and so on. You have to know how to do the light and shade and give each product a different kind of zing. You don't want items to run together. It's not about the words, it's about the client's marketing objectives. Instead of blasting through a list of words, it's really the marketer saying, here's the range of products we have on offer, look at our marvellous range. But you have to imply that in the inflection and tempo you use. You really learn what's in your vocal kit bag and you explore your own voice. I practiced for 2 years. In the meantime, I ran a theatre company which specialised in writing and performing training playlets for businesses and services. There was heavy stuff we did about anti-aggression and violence, dealing with people who were dying and their families, hospitals and doctors giving bad news to patients, lots of very difficult interpersonal stuff. That was my job. Outside of that, I was practising voicing because it's a highly stylised way of speaking. And to be a really good voiceover, you need to know when 30 seconds is up, when 20 seconds is up. You need to develop your internal stopwatch to a tenth of a second, a hundredth of a second in some cases. You have to know the timing. I went back after 2 years and said, could I try again? They listened and then they started giving me work. It developed, more came in, and I had to give up my theatre company. A few years ago, London Underground approached a production... A few years ago, London Underground approached a production house I worked for and asked them for recommendations. This production house suggested 3 men and 3 women, including me. London Underground took it very seriously and they tried out these different voices in focus groups over an 18-month period. I think there were about 6 lines we did for the test. Mind the gap. The next station is, you know... They gave each voice a code name. Mine was Marilyn. Anyway, it was a rigorous selection process and I'm not sure what qualities they perceived from my voice, but they chose mine. I've often wondered if they call me Brenda or Ethel, whether the punters would have chosen me. I was in a pasta restaurant in Barnes in southwest London when I got a call. I couldn't believe it. I thought, you're taking the piss. To be honest, it had been going on for so long, I thought they'd given it to someone else. But no, they were still testing and testing. I kept it quiet. I'm not a person to go, guess what? I've got it. I just wanted it to occur when it occurred. More months passed because they couldn't decide on the script. They really cared about getting it right. The first session we did took about an hour and a half to record the station names and please don't leave your bags unattended and, you know, basic safety messages. Move along the carriage and stuff. Because there isn't a huge amount to record, really. Once you've said, the next station is Oxford Circus, you know, how many ways can you say it? They did ask for variations on Marylebone. They couldn't decide how to pronounce Marylebone, whether it was Marylebone, 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 or, most bizarrely, Marylobon. So I had to voice all alternatives. I think they chose Marylebone. We went line by line because the different lines in the London Underground are owned by different parts of the organisation and they needed a sense of continuity, an audio through line. I have a fondness for all of the names, I really do. I suppose I particularly like Piccadilly Circus. I like the rhythm of it. Piccadilly Circus. My favourite is Faden Bois. That was great. Mind the Gap was straightforward, though we tried it several ways. I felt I didn't want it to sound too scary, didn't want people to think I was some sort of awful dominatrix wearing thigh-high PVC boots, because there's a balance between warning somebody of a potential danger and scaring the living daylights out of them. It was all done in received pronunciation, no London accent. It was about clarity, about encouraging the people who would hear the announcements to understand it straight off and have no doubt. I think they're right to have done it the way they did. I love regional accents, but their concern was that foreign visitors might not understand a regional accent as well as they might receive pronunciation. So it was a safer bet to go with RP. But I don't talk in RP normally. If I use this accent at work, I'd never get booked because very rarely do people want this accent. They only want my normal northern accent if it's playing the part of a person giving a testimonial about an earthy, down-to-earth product, you know, like fence primer. It's become more fashionable to use regional accents in national campaigns. A northern accent would be rustic, trustworthy, no nonsense. A Cockney accent would be cheeky, wide boy. I also recorded all sorts of fail-safe announcements for all the tube lines, so if there was a technical problem, they'd be ready. This train will not stop at... God, you know, I was very conscious when I read those lines not to sound like I was gloating or like I sounded smug. It is important to sound clear and empathetic, authoritative and somehow nurturing at the same time. You can do that. It's subtle, but when you hear it, when you paint with that many shades, you hear it straight away. Like, if I was to say, the next station is Oxford Circus. It's crisp and clear, but not a lot of soul in there. But if I was to say it again this way, the next station is Oxford Circus. It's welcoming. It's embracing. It's a difference in tone, in consonantal attack. There's all sorts of things you can do, like with the plosives, p, b, t, d, k, g. You attack them. When you need to sound crisper, you're straight on them, whereas if you're doing a softer read, you sort of blur them. And the way you use the resonators in your head for a crisp, clear, corporate-sounding version, you use the resonators in the top of your head, whereas you use these kind of sounds when it's warmer, like that, you know. If you're going to do it properly, you need to know all this stuff and put the voice in the right place. So I tried to do it as welcomingly as I could. I did think, actually, in what circumstances would people hear my voice? How would they be feeling when they heard my voice? Would they be glad to be in London? Would they be scared to be in London? What will people be experiencing when they hear my voice? What will they be coming from or heading towards? It's quite a weird thing. I've done hospital radio and it's weird to think people would have listened to my voice as they were dying. It's a very strange feeling. You invisibly accompany people. You're the soundtrack to their lives when you're a voiceover artist. When people are on hold, thank God they're going to be really pissed off with my voice. That was a concern with the Underground. I really hope people aren't too irritated. I'm sure they will be. When they've had a hard day, when the tube's late, when it might have had a technical malfunction, and it's me telling them over and over again that they'll get there soon. It's funny because when I got the call from London Underground, I was at the restaurant with a guy I was seeing at the time, and he said, God, I'll hear you everywhere. He wasn't saying it happily at all. We split up soon after that. Not because of that, but soon after. He's since told me he's haunted. It's scary. You're having a bad day and you get on the tube and there's the voice. Poor guy.